Welcome to Tilt Talk Radio. Today we're going to be talking about it's time to get your cover crop seed. Make sure you've got what you need for when your crops are harvested. Our spotlight will take a look at turning unprofitable acres into an asset. Ag History Minute, we'll talk about the history of 4th of July fireworks. Cool Beans, That's Corny, we'll have some current events. We'll wrap things up with a Field Good Friday. With me today are Bill Schaumburg.
Hey guys.
Todd Schaumburg.
Hey to all the Tilthies out there.
And I'm Matt Brueger, all with Tilth Agronomy. Well, it's post America's birthday. Did you guys have a good fourth?
Got all 10.
It's good. Yep. 10 fingers, 10 toes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yep.
Nobody stepped on any large exploding fireworks. That's good.
Did you have a good fourth, Matt?
Yeah, not too bad. Didn't do a whole lot over the weekend, which is, I mean, did stuff, but nothing too crazy.
Todd, did you dodge the raindrops on the boat?
To watch we got rained on. We always do. It's fine.
It didn't rain that much, right?
No, actually, it did not where we were, so it was fine. And it was, yeah, fireworks shows we saw were great, so you can't.
That's good.
You can't beat that. It's good fireworks. And 4th of July coming in on a Saturday. Did you guys like that, dislike that?
Weird.
It was fine.
Yeah, I kind of liked it. It just made it easier to do stuff on that day.
Everybody else recognized it on Friday anyway. Wow. So, and it seems like, you know, it used to be the Friday of a holiday weekend, regardless of when the actual holiday is. Like, that was the day you wanted to avoid any North Roads, like, just be full. Now it's like Thursday.
Sure,
everybody's already going up. I was just going to say that, Matt. I was doing my scouting rounds north of Bondiwell on Thursday morning and trying to navigate to get crossed east and west, crossed County R north of Bondiwell there. Just getting east and west across it, I noticed a lot of traffic Thursday morning headed north.
Everybody's got to get up to the cabin for the weekend. But, no, yeah. Todd, you and I were at the same party for a while on Saturday, and it was actually nice weather.
It was like
didn't rain.
Like you couldn't have asked for a better day. You know, the sun was out, but it wasn't too hot. A little bit of breeze, but not windy, and perfect day.
Yeah, so definitely can't complain. We dodged the rain showers for the most part over the weekend. It's been really weird how everybody you talk to, no matter where you go, it's like rainfall's been really different, especially
very sporadic.
Yeah, I was just looking up the rainfall totals for Seymour. So for the month of July, we're at a little over an inch, which sounds about right for the last week.
It's only been a week. Yep.
June we were at just under 5 inches. May we only had 2 inches of rain, and April we had 10.5 inches.
Yeah.
You go down by like Fond du Lac area, just north of Fond du Lac, where it seems a lot of the storms have been splitting. They've actually gotten a little ahead of us this time around. They're at 1.6. June they had 2.4 to our 4.9, so they had half the rain we had. May they had 1.7, so even less than our 2, and then they had about 2 inches less in April. And then Green Bay, they're at 1.3 for the July already, so they're a little bit ahead of us. June, they were at 7.36. May, they had 3.29. And April, 11.34. So, really not that big a geographical difference, but fairly big difference in some of the rainfalls. So, yesterday I was on the other side of Lake Winnebago, and it's surprised how droughty a lot of that stuff looks. So,
it's, would you guys know, May actually broke records for one of the driest Mays in Wisconsin, and I feel like that happened without us even knowing happened.
Well, it was so wet in April, it was like, oh.
Right. Yeah. Correct. That's a good way to put it. It was like, well, how was it that dry? And we still got some rain, but usually May, you get more consistent rain. And usually when it is that dry, we have, say, emergence problems, which we had a little bit of that, depending on. And then problems getting our residual herbicides.
I was just going to say, we've had talks on this podcast back in May about worrying about, is our residual going to work?
So that makes sense, but it did surprise me that it was a record-breaking May.
Sure.
It just seemed like a drier than normal May.
Which, when I looked at the year-to-date totals, we're at 27 inches year-to-date. So what do you think our average rainfall by now is?
27 inches.
At like 18?
Close. 16.
Wow.
Ooh, so we are
11 inches ahead, but almost all of that is April. April was so much. Like, on the average, we're not for, like you said, it was abnormally dry May. June was, I don't know if it was average, but it was, seemed like we got some rain and stuff there. And now we'll see what July brings, but you just never know what you're going to get with the rain. And none of them were, I guess, all that. Like, some of the real heavy stuff wasn't more than just localized shots. Like Green Bay, that one, they got flooded. Hail and water and flood because it plugged all the sewer drains at the hail. And so, yeah, just a little bit wild what you... You don't know what you're going to get.
Is weather like a box of chocolates, man?
Yes.
Yes. Yes, it is.
Good news, though, is our crops are far enough along that we can take a lot. It's just the severe stuff, hail and wind, that, right, we get nervous about now.
Yeah. And actually, I have seen some of the wet spots being stunted from staying wet too long in some areas. And so, it was just a really, for me, going from this area to the other side of the lake yesterday, just a night and day difference of, I haven't seen any like droughty looking corn around here versus over there. You could see some stuff that was definitely in need of a drink.
And it sounds like the Northwoods, the corn that's up in the Northwoods is struggling a little bit too. They were kind of missing some of those rains north of 64 that we were getting, so...
And it's sandier up there, too, so they can't hold any extra moisture, really.
Nope.
So.
At least we had the weather to talk about at 4th of July.
Yeah.
So it was awkward. You can just talk about the weather.
Just talk about the weather.
Some stuff going on.
There's always something to talk about. You can get into all sorts of things. After you left the party, we were talking about roundabouts.
So. Ooh.
What's the consensus with the group? Did they not like roundabouts?
We just got into angry old man like complaints about drivers, which led to roundabouts, and talking about the rules of roundabouts.
Just go.
Because not everybody knows the rules or understands them as well as they think they do.
Do you blinker, Matt, in a roundabout?
I don't.
You're supposed to, right?
You're supposed to, but you're only supposed to right before you exit the roundabout. So you're literally putting your blinker on for like a half a second.
As you're turning.
So that was actually part of the discussion, was blinker, no blinker. And
I do think size matters in roundabout.
Yeah, when the dump truck or the semi doesn't stop, you stop in the roundabout regardless. You're not supposed to stop in a roundabout.
Not so much the size of the vehicle. Well, that too.
But that matters
the size of the roundabout.
Yeah. Well,
I can attest to that.
Multi-lane roundabouts, too, usually have, like, a lane where you know they're either...
You're only going
one way or the other. They're not turning right or...
Lanes are usually... Now they're labeled much better, which is good. But I cannot speak to anything. I've lost my roundabout card to speak to anything about roundabouts. So I actually just got a letter in the mail that I need to take a class about roundabouts. So earlier this spring, I was in an accident in a roundabout, my fault, and yes, the I can attest to Bill saying the size.
I will say, Todd, you've made me very heightened in my entrance and exit of those specific roundabouts.
Yes, like when they're small, you really got to watch
yep.
where everybody is and what they're doing, because there's not a lot of room for more.
Especially in that not the bar, but right at the corner of your vehicle where you sometimes get...
Correct, in that, yeah. But I would say they do, the X90 did have, would have been much worse had it been stop sign, like, or you're going so slow sure. in a roundabout that it...
Well, you're supposed to be anyway.
Yes. Yeah.
That's not always the case. But
this case, it slowed all the vehicles down, including me, enough that it wasn't, nobody was hurt. So that's a good thing.
And no T-boning per se.
Exactly. Yeah, you're not going right at the side. You're at a spot where you're a little bit more protected. But I will, yes, I will let you know what the...
So is that the virtual or in-person?
It's virtual, which is, like, there's all these virtual academies that are available. There was like 20 available that you take it, and then you have to provide the certificate of completion to the Wisconsin DOT. So
presumably there's some sort of quiz at the end of the video that you have to take.
I don't know that yet. That's the part I'm unsure of, like how, because it was, yes, my daughter is also going to be, she's going through driver's ed right now, so that is the joke that I will be attending.
You're going through driver's ed too?
With her. But that's all changed too. Like, she's got to watch all these videos, like quite a few hours a video, and they're on like the history of cars. This is the early stuff.
Sure.
It's just like very general knowledge of the roadway system and things. So
yeah, because basically to get your temps, it's almost all online, isn't it?
Correct.
Yeah.
Yes, to get your... Yep, it's like a bunch of videos online. So, and you can't, I think it's 2 hours at a time, and then it won't let you, it's not like you can binge watch all of them in one day or one sitting.
Sure.
You have to space them out.
Digest them.
So much, yeah.
So you can't just fall asleep with your earbuds in.
Right. And there is a quiz at the end, so.
Do they still, as part of the, or I probably hasn't gotten that far, but they still make you watch the awfully produced, like, drunk driving video? Or
I don't know that.
Thank you. Tommy's dead. What? Like, I don't even remember what it was. Death on Prom Night or something. Like, it had a terrible name. But I'm sure that there's some version of that. Maybe AI just built a...
There you go.
A new one for driver's ed. Who knows? All right. Well, that's depressing that your daughter's... Is the supposed to be 15 in September here?
September. So, yeah, now you have your temps for a full year.
Yep.
And practice driving, so...
And then, is it still the sideways license then once they get them?
I believe so, yes. Yeah. Bill, you would know that.
Yeah, I think till
you're 18. Yeah.
I don't think my 19-year-old has had... No. I guess I haven't looked at hers to see if it expired when she turned 19 and then she had to, or 18, and then got a new one.
Sure.
Maybe it's 20. Well, who knows? Everything's changed.
it's all different.
Can't go in the casino at 18 anymore.
So are you the one who's going to have to teach your daughter to drive, or is your wife, or is it going to be a combo?
It's a combo. I think it'll be a combo effort. We've started on the golf cart. Is the first step of
the driving. Actually saw them going through the other day.
So. Yep, she's doing okay on that four-wheeler, the Ace four-wheeler. That
Ooh,
is
nice.
Like a one-up UTV. That's a good...
It's a very good tool.
Yeah, the lawnmower, but
other than the... When you step on the gas, it doesn't go right. Like, it's got that lag.
That is one part like, even when I first drove, I just thought that was weird. Like, when you put it in the drive, it just goes. That isn't intuitive to me. And, like, the golf cart isn't like that, or
yep.
most vehicles, tractors, were kind of like that, but you had to let out the clutch.
Right.
So it was a little different, or it made sense driving a lot of tractor. But not everything, like even our lawnmower, we have a zero turn. So it's not like I can throw it. I mean, you still get the gist of spatial awareness and things around you, but having a steering wheel,
right,
a brake, and a gas pedal, to me, are the pretty critical things of what a vehicle would have. And,
yep.
And even lawnmower, you know, the one we grew up with, Bill, had a steering wheel and a
brake
pedal. And so you could kind of get a little of the idea of what it's going to be like. It's quite different.
Your lawnmower had a brake pedal or a clutch?
It had both.
Oh, yeah. Our riding lawnmowers as a kid
just had like
a clutch.
Remember
any of them had a brake combo. It was just the clutch, yeah.
Yeah. But yes.
It had a parking brake.
Yeah.
Which you could flip up, which I never really used.
Oh, yeah.
But. All right. You guys ready to get into our topic for today?
Sure.
So it's kind of that getting to be that point of the season where you're probably done with most of your applications. I mean, you probably got your nitrogen down. Maybe you're going to put a little bit of Y drop out yet. Spraying, whether you want to be or not, you're probably done. Just stage of a lot of these crops is getting to the point where you're going to be off label if you're spraying at this point.
You're rescuing.
Or doing rescue point. Applications, yep. And so now we're kind of riding till harvest starts, which for wheat, it'll be starting to see a lot of wheat turn, other than one really green field I saw yesterday, which was kind of surprising. Yeah. It was like, whoa.
I was in a couple yesterday and shucked a couple heads, and I do the bite method. I think Todd does as
well.
Yes,
yep, I do that as well.
Highly technical.
There was zero milk. It was very hard.
It was hard.
Way harder than I expected. I think wheat is closer than we think.
I was shocked at how close.
Wheat joke.
Shocked. Yes, I shocked it out there. No, I was shocked at how dry it got, but also then went, is it fooling us or not? Because it just tends to do that where it feels like it's ready for a long... Like,
there's enough green stems in some of those fields.
Yes. That my farmers always tease me on wheat. If I say it's ready, they wait a week.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and I've noticed if I look at what I say, like early July, what I predicted, because early July I said 3 weeks, so like the 21st of July was kind of the date. And if I kind of stick with that, usually I do better than as I like keep changing it. I think it was the Monday, the 20th of July was kind of a date that.
But after tomorrow, there's not a day below 85.
Correct.
In the 10-day. Tomorrow's a little chill, and that's 79, but after that, we're 85 to 90, 2, 3, 4 in that neighborhood. So that is going to.
Yeah, and right now, not a lot of chances of rain past tomorrow either. I mean, there was not much in the forecast for tomorrow anymore, mostly today.
We need to make good straw, so that's hopefully will hold, because we're not going to have a lot of it. So hopefully we'll make good straw.
Good straw, yeah.
And wheat, of course.
But yeah, so maybe you're thinking, oh, it's time to go fishing or time to relax a little bit if you don't have dairy cows. Because if you have dairy cows, then you're not relaxing. You
never relax.
Going on to the next feeding or milking or what have you. But, you know, is it time for vacation? Well, maybe you should do one thing before you take off, and that's if you're going to put a cover crop out this fall, if you don't already have your seed, it's probably time to get that ready. You know, we're so used to with crop seeds, you're at this point now you're buying all your crop seed for next year before you even harvested this year's crop. But when it comes to the cover crop, you've got to get some of that stuff on hand so that once harvest is done, you're ready to go. So it's time to kind of think about those factors when it comes to picking out your seed. And we're getting ready for a field day and trying to do some different things with seed. And a couple of local guys were out of some stuff already when we were trying to get certain cover crop seeds. So between deer plots and everything else, there's a fair demand for some of these varieties. So it's good to be on the front end of getting this stuff ready. So before you check out, it's time to maybe get that order in if you haven't already. And whether it's rye, cereals, legumes, brassicas, doesn't matter. Get what you need so you're ready. Because if wheat does come off in 2 to 3 weeks here, and you're going to put a cover crop behind it, you're going to be planting in potentially 4 weeks. So you've got maybe a month.
Which is one of the, okay, I'm going to, is the best place to put a cover crop.
100%.
After wheat.
Yep, and you've got pretty much any species, any variety of whatever you want to put out there that you can do, because you've got plenty of time for it to be out there. The biggest factor is moisture, whether we get enough moisture to germinate it right away.
We always seem to find enough.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Especially on a cover crop, if you don't, it's something comes, and it's not the end of the world if it's not perfect. So,
yeah, and you don't need it to get 6 feet tall right away. It can, it's got time to grow, keep the weeds down, and keep the soil where you want it. So when you're picking out your seed, you got to remember, figure out what your goal is. So that goal could be having a multi-species mix, or maybe you're just going to put a single species out there. If you're doing single species, though, you want to watch, especially on wheat, certain things. If you put them out too early, they might not last deep into the fall. Certain species actually mature pretty fast, so that's why sometimes it's better to do a mix, especially in wheat, because you can get something to grow right away, and some other things that might take a little longer, so you keep that cover throughout the whole fall.
If we're going to use radish, that's the time, right? If you're ever going to use radish with anything,
yeah,
for
yeah.
cover,
yep,
now's the time.
Get as much growth as possible out of that radish. That would be a great time for it.
And all three of us have probably been in fields where the radishes are waste. You know, if you get it in early, they have a lot of growth and can really do good things.
Yep.
For soil coverage.
And you'll feel it when you run it over with a four-wheeler.
Yeah.
When it comes to be soil sampling time. All right. So, yeah, figure out your goal. Figure out your timing. Are you going to put it in right away? Do you need to do manure? Are you going to put your cover crop in before the manure? Are you going to wait till after? So what time frame is planting going to take place for you? And does it need to overwinter? So are you going to get a species that just going to stay green through the fall and then die over winter? Or are you going to put something out that maybe is a mix where some of it will be back in the spring and the rest will die off? Or everything, as much as possible, you want green in the spring? It all depends. Goals, timing, overwintering, those are all going to go into making that decision. So, sorry,
Matt.
Go ahead.
Question.
Yeah.
If I'm nervous about what next spring is going to look like, maybe the field I'm going to put cover in is somewhat poorly drained. I don't have tile. I don't want a giant mass that I might not be able to get in next spring, get away from me. Would you then recommend still doing an overwinter, but just dropping the seeding rate?
Either that or doing a mix of, like, I know there's a lot of guys that like to do, like, rye and barley, where the barley will be dead.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have the rye, and the rye is not as thick, so then you don't have that thick mat come spring. There's a few different ways to lower that seeding rate, and especially the earlier you're getting in, the lower your seeding rate can be, just in general. I mean, you don't need 100 pounds of rye for just a cover crop in the end of
September.
Well, even the end of August, early September, or any time if it's not forage, you don't need that much seed. You know, the earlier it is, the lower you can go for a seeding rate, especially if you're drilling it. If you're drone seeding, like over the top of a crop or something like that, then you're probably going to notch it up just a little bit because of, you know, broadcast not being as good.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Man, I like that. As farmers are looking for hacks, or there's all these articles currently with the lower crop prices, high input prices, of how do you work on tight margins? And I think that would be a good one. And that's a pretty bold statement, not bold, but just something we don't think about in our budgets of maybe I'm gonna plant less cover crop seed and plant it early.
Yeah,
save money.
It's an easy way to keep the price down, and that's another thing to really think about too: is how much do you want to spend on a mix? Because some of these species, if you're looking to do multi-species, maybe you leave out some of the more expensive ones, and you know just do stuff that's a little bit cheaper. I mean, one of the cheapest things you can throw out there is sunflowers.
That's the cheap. That is the currently.
It's one of the cheaper side. Yeah,
and eat a few and chuck some.
Well, I don't know if I'd eat the ones you're gonna plant.
Never know.
I've never tried to plant the ones you eat into the ground to see how they would grow. You still get like the Taco Bell flavored one.
I think that's how they grow.
Do you get a spicy sunflower from a Taco Bell coated seed?
You can't plant the ones you eat and eat the ones you plant, right?
Yeah. Another thing to think about is seed size. Bill, you were talking about radishes, and it's great to throw radishes out there, especially in a mix. I don't really care to do radishes alone, and I don't think many people have done that for years, but early on that was like the thing, is you'd just put those tillage radishes out. Less is more when it comes to those. There's so many seeds per pound with those species that you only need a pound or two, or even less, depending on how many things you're throwing in the mix. So it's another way to keep costs down is look at the seeds per pound and realize, you know, take that into account when you look at your seeding rate. Like, I don't need to put 10 pounds of this out here. I can just put a couple pounds, and I'm still going to have a lot of plants.
It's been a while that we've really pushed straight tillage radish. Probably over 20 years when...
Well, it was just when it first came out, I feel like. Yeah. And we had the seeding rate all... We didn't know.
Well, yeah.
So it was just...
Nobody was really that familiar with it.
I remember the first time at the Forage Council auction that we auctioned... That somebody donated a bag that, and it was auctioned off. And it was like a 50-pound bag. And they're like, well, how many acres would it cover? And they're like, maybe five, you know, if you're lucky. And
10 pounds. 10 pounds.
Yeah, it was like... But it was just kind of whatever, and... Yeah, everybody, you just thought more would be better. It just pushed through the ground more, and obviously we've learned that. Would you agree the current rate's like a pound to 2 pounds?
Most. Even depending on how diverse of a mix you're looking to put, like half a pound's even fine. Like,
yeah, right.
You don't need, unless you, I would say, keep it on the higher end of that range. If you think you really have an issue where that you think the radish is going to help break up some compaction or something like that, then that would be a reason maybe to keep it a little bit higher. But in general, yeah, 1 to 2 pounds or less even is more than enough when it comes to those small-seeded brassicas, turnips, radish, all that kind of stuff. And yeah, cereals are a good way to get that overwintering, but... Like we talked about, Bill, you can mix them, you know, mix, say, oats and rye or barley and rye. And you'll have residue that'll help kind of suppress weeds in the spring and something green growing, help suck out some of the moisture and also help keep down some of the weed pressure. So there's lots of ways you can cut it when you look at these species, and there's tools like we talked earlier this year about the Midwest Cover Crop Council, their calculator for cover crops that'll give you an idea of the growing ranges and all that kind of stuff. So talk to your agronomist, talk to your neighbor, maybe go together and order seed. I know a lot of times some of these companies, if you're ordering seed from further away, like if it's a specialty seed you think you need or that you want to use, a lot of times they charge by the pallet, regardless of how many seeds you put on the pallet. I just talked to a guy the other day, and yeah, it was $120 a pallet, whether there's 5 bags on it or it's full.
Oh, wow.
So you're better off talking to a couple neighbors, getting another way to save money.
Mm-hmm.
Talk to your neighbors, get an order together, get a full pallet. And actually, Todd, one of the cheapest things, so green cover seed, and this is not probably for a beginner, but if you really want to try something diverse in a wheat situation, they have a floor sweepings mix.
Ooh.
It's like 50 cents a pound.
The Wapatooey mix.
It's like, yeah, it's whatever was on the floor when they swept it up. And
the Wapatooey mix, love it.
The weed seeds are free.
Yes.
Those come along for no.
I actually haven't seen too many.
That mix?
I haven't seen too many weed, like nasty weeds or anything.
They're taking floor sweepings of
cleaned seed already. Yeah.
And that mix could actually be a lot of fun because it would just be like a surprise out there of what's coming and what you get. And
it changes by the time of year too, depending on what they're packing at that time or shipping. So it's not always the same, and you never know how much of anything that you're getting in it because they don't sit there and count how many seeds of each one are.
It's like that packet of seed that farmers were getting in the mail from China a couple of years ago.
Except for those had weed seeds in it, whereas this does not.
Fair.
But
is this like the
you might even get chocolates? Corn in there, which is always kind of interesting. Like you get this random corn plant showing up. But it's cheap, and it's a diverse mix. I wouldn't put it probably, I mean, maybe even after silage you could get away with it if it's an early silage year. But once you get deeper into the fall, that one's not as good to use.
Do they literally call it
floor sweeping?
Floor sweepings, or yep. Or okay? I thought maybe they just put like bin run or VNS variety not stated on it somehow. You know, like
yeah, no,
make it a little bit more.
It's called the floor sweepings.
I like that. It's like the shotgun approach.
Yeah, you'll try every species you can think of potentially.
It's just a shotgun mix of everything.
But regardless, if you're going to do cover crops, start thinking about it now. Start getting that order together. Because before you know it, it's going to be time to go. And it's a lot easier to get them put in the ground if you've got the seed on hand. Rather than waiting till, harvest is done. Now I should go get my seed. And pretty soon it's like a month later because 10 million things got in the way. You probably have the time now to just look it over, figure out what you want to do, make a plan, and get the seed on order. So there's your PSA for today. Order your cover crop seed. You don't have to order ahead, like as far ahead as we do normal cash crop seed. You don't have to order it last year already, but
get it done.
Get in the habit of getting it and having it on hand so that when it's time to go, you're ready. All right, with that, we'll move into our spotlight for today. So there's programs that can get you into a pollinator habitat, turning unprofitable acres into an asset for your ground, whether you're taking part in cost sharing or not. There's an Indiana farmer who turned 9 low-yielding acres into a pollinator habitat, which improved his field's return on investment and created a space for monarchs and other wildlife. Brian Scott, who farms in north-central Indiana, spent years farming a hill that never yielded much. When he finally got the chance to purchase the ground, he decided the smartest thing to do with those 9 acres was to stop farming them. The hill's very sandy and very much higher than the rest of the field. It holds very little water. Scott said, bordered on one side by trees, the hill rarely produced much during cropping years. When Scott rented the farm, after comparing the hill's long-term yield history against input costs, he concluded the acres were best suited for another purpose. So rather than allowing the area to naturally revert to brush and trees, he worked with NRCS to enroll the acres in the Conservation Reserve Program, or CRP, and establish a pollinator planting instead. So it's a common thing, I think, seeing more of rather than planting some acres that lose you money. There's opportunities to do something different with it, whether it's restored wetlands or putting in its CRP. So birds, deer, other animals, they love it. Insects are buzzing constantly. Till recently, a neighbor kept several beehives adjacent to it, so if you like bees or you like to keep bees, it's another opportunity to help with that. And it improved the field's bottom line. So one thing that certainly doesn't always get enough attention is keep it profitable, especially in tight years, and this might be a way to make those less than acres into something that at least doesn't take away from your profits. So now we'll move into our Ag History Minute. So we just got done celebrating the 250th birthday of America. Many of you probably did that with some sort of exploding thing, whether it was sparklers, those pops that you throw at the ground, or actual big-time fireworks. And fireworks have been a part and parcel of the U.S. Independence Day since the anniversary of the signing of the Declaration of Independence in July of 1777. The celebration took place in the midst of the Revolutionary War, and explosions, artillery fire, and bombs bursting near were not exactly a cause for joy at that time during the fighting, but they still had some sort of firework celebration. And why, you might ask? Well, to answer this question, a lot of people point to John Adams, who wrote a letter to his wife Abigail informing her that the Continental Congress had declared independence. And he said, "This day ought to be solemnized with pomp and parade, shoes, games," shoes not like what you put on your feet, but it's a different meaning and different spelling, "game, sports, guns, bells, bonfires, and illuminations from one end of this continent to the other, from this time forward, forevermore." Pyrotechnics were already a common manner of celebration at that time, particularly to mark national triumphs and the restoration of peace. How fireworks came to be a central component of Independence Day celebrations in the U.S. was ultimately the result of hundreds of years of pageantry when it came to that. So celebratory displays of fireworks, we know today, evolved from the use of fireworks in romantic performances of combat, in elaborate pageants and plays typically associated with national events. Whether it's in England with King Henry VII, whose royal standard bore the red dragon, including fireworks at his wedding in 1486, the first known use of fireworks at a national celebration, and his wife's coronation in 1487 featured a fire-breathing dragon, which became a popular royal fireworks display during the reign of the Tudors. So it's not unheard of for celebrations up to that point, and just was right from the start something that's been done. So for 249 years, I guess, we've been setting off fireworks, since we didn't do it the first year. At least, not officially, so. There you go.
Thank you, Matt. Thank you to our listeners out there. Please subscribe to the podcast and tell a farmer friend. It's real easy. Just search Tilth Talk Radio on Apple Podcasts. Or if you're on an Android phone, search Spotify, or we also like Podcast Addict. And we are. You can also listen to us on your computer or smartphone browser. Go to tilthag.com/podcasts. And you can follow us on Facebook and X at Tilth Talk Radio.
All right. Thanks, Todd. Now it's time for some Cool Beans, That's Corny, and some current events. So, Cool Beans?
Cool Beans.
Cool Beans.
Cool Beans. Our Cool Beans this week. China is expected to potentially drop a 10% tariff on U.S. ag goods, including soybeans. While it's not yet confirmed by U.S. Trade Representative offices, the Arlen Sutterman, the chief commodities expert, says the tariffs could be dropped by October 1st. Grain markets rallied as a result of this first potential confirmation of China lowering its tariffs on U.S. ag goods. The U.S. and China have set a guiding objective for expanding two-way agricultural trade. Chinese Ministry of Commerce says the parties have agreed to include ag products under a reciprocal tariff reduction agreement. The U.S. will reportedly end its 10% fentanyl tariff, and China will reciprocate by dropping its 10% tax on U.S. ag goods, including soybeans and grains. While not 100% for sure, but it could happen by this fall, which would be just in time for harvest. So hopefully that stays the course. Our That's Corny this week. Tar spot's been confirmed in 29 Nebraska counties.
No.
Yes, just what we all wanted to hear. So tar spot has spread to 29 counties in Nebraska, according to the latest Crop Protection Network map. This is up from 8 counties 3 weeks ago, so it's been on the rise for a little bit here. Across Nebraska's 93 counties, 60 have a history of tar spot since the disease was first detected there in 2021. In addition to the rapid spread across Nebraska, confirmed cases have also been found in Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Kansas, and Missouri. So.
No, God! No, God, please, no! 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 No!
I agree, Michael Scott. No. So not much showing in Wisconsin yet, but hopefully it's later. We've had it show up the last few years late in the season where it hasn't been as detrimental other than some pockets of things. So hopefully Nebraska keeps it. Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Kansas, Missouri, they can all keep it. Always something we got to be on the lookout for and keep in the back of our minds. So, all right, now to wrap things up, we'll have our Field Good Friday. So, from soil to yogurt, MVP Dairy is building sustainability for the next generation. At MVP Dairy, two fourth generation farm families with more than 100 years of farming history have come together to build a system where every decision is made with the next generation in mind. So before a cup of yogurt reaches the grocery shelf, the story starts in the soil and in the barns on farms like the McCarty families, which have been built over four generations and are focused on sustaining the operation for a fifth. MVP Dairy in Salina, Ohio. This journey began more than a century ago with a family who understood that keeping the farm viable for the next generation would depend on building sustainability into every decision for themselves, their cows, and the consumers they serve. So they've invested four generations and over 100 years worth of blood, sweat, and tears into the farm, said Ken McCarty, one of the farm's owners. We hope to provide the opportunity for fifth and future generations, from cropping decisions and manure handling to cow comfort, nutrition, and technology investments. Those priorities show up across the entire operation. At MVP, sustainability is about steady improvements over time by finding small ways to do things better. So the McCarty's dairy roots go back to northeastern Pennsylvania, where McCarty's great-grandfather began milking a small herd on a hillside farm around 1914. As the operation moved through the generations, a turning point came when the family began to confront what it would take for the next generation to keep the farm going. In the early 90s, my parents recognized that the future for my three brothers and I to come back to the dairy in Pennsylvania wasn't necessarily very bright. And so rather than accept limitation of staying put, they began looking for a way to keep the next generation involved, even if it meant starting over somewhere else. And that search led them west to Kansas, where the family built McCarty Family Farms in Rexford in 2000, starting with a few hundred cows and quickly scaling as the next generation came back to the business. So we first got started in Kansas. We were traditionally co-op dairy and really had no ties to where our products went, to any sort of best management practices, welfare, higher standards, quality, environmental sustainability, or community development. That began to change when the family started talking with Danone North America. Is it Danone or Danone? I never know how to pronounce that. It used to be Danone.
I remember they added Danone. The E,
and that totally changed the whole thing. But anyway, their journey with Danone began in April of 2010. They milked 3,500 cows on two separate sites. In order to facilitate the relationship and milk demands, they had to grow, and that kept their business going. So shipping condensed milk directly to them started in 2012, and gave the family a clear line of sight from the cows to the yogurt and products that Danone produced. And the relationship gave way to a family... gave the family a way to move beyond simply staying in business and building a structure that connected production, stewardship, and markets in an intentional way. So, always going to be looking for that way to keep going and, in this case, integrate production with end user products. So it's a good goal. Keep your farm going for the next generation. Hopefully you've got a next generation to that wants to stay.
I feel like that's every farm's really deep down goal, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, they all hope to do that.
That's the ultimate.
So, all right. Well, that'll do it for this week. Thanks for being here, guys.
Thanks for having us, Matt.
So this week we talked about getting your cover crop seed, making sure you've got it on hand for when it's time to plant. Spotlight, we talked about turning unprofitable acres into something that's not dipping into your bottom line. Egg History Minute, we talked about the history of July 4th fireworks. Cool beans this week, a potential drop in tariff on U.S. egg products from China. That's corny. Nebraska's confirming 29 counties with tar spot. And our Feel Good Friday, a farm with over 100 years of farming experience that has found a way to build sustainability and keep going for the next generation. So thanks for listening, and as always, happy farming.